if there's a new voter order. And 817, they have Tuesday, March 30th, County Library, and Dayton Street Housings. The first calls are by Representative Clark, Representative Cortez, Vice Chair, Representative Hughes, and also Representative Zolkowski, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Others in the room, please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. And those attending remotely, good morning, ladies. Please keep yourselves on mute while you're not speaking. Before we begin, I would like to thank Judy Pierre, the House Staff Affairs Secretary for Records, and Marissa Truitt, from the General Office, for staffing the committee today. Today, we will be having a hearing on House Bill 123 by myself, Representative Zolkowski, relating to state government issues by the Lenape Five Tribes. We will be working studies, and we will hand the gavel off to Representative Rodriguez, and so that my staff and I can say what the presenters people.
Representative Zolkowski, please proceed with the introduction of HB 123.
All right, thank you. For the record, I am Representative Tiffany Zolkowski from House District 38. I represent Bethel and the Franklin County region. I'm really excited and privileged to introduce House Bill 123 to the new committee. House Bill 123 began as a bipartisan effort during the 31st legislature and probably continued during the 32nd legislature. This House Bill is the first time that Alaska would formally recognize our tribes in Alaska state law. Tribes have been recognized by the federal government, and we'll share that this morning in the presentation from our committee testimony, and by the executive and judicial branches of Alaska's government. But we, the legislature, have not yet put forward formal recognition in law of Alaska's tribes. Per the memos of legislative legal that we've provided to members of the committee, passing this bill does not change Alaska's relationship with tribes as that's established in the federal statute that we will hear more about this morning. But what it would do is open the door for formal recognition through our legal statutes to honor the existence and history and unique cultural identity of Alaska's tribes in our state. One of the questions that we've heard previously about this legislation and that we've heard since the introduction is, if this bill doesn't change the legal relationship between the state and its tribes, why is it worth pursuing in the first place? The executive branch executes the branch policy, and the judicial branch interprets policy, but the legislature creates policy. The state has looked for tribal partners to help provide the numerous number of essential services to Alaskans living in the most remote parts of our state, and provide services from public safety and transportation to healthcare and economic development. In 2017, as we discussed in committee, the state entered its first ever state and tribal compact outside the Alaska Tribal Capital Health Compact. There have been ongoing conversations about pursuing compacting through education and other ways to expand our relationships with tribes. But it's difficult, I believe, for us in the legislature to really talk about expanding the existing relationship with tribes when we have not taken the first formal step in acknowledging the relationship of tribes and the existence that they existence that they have had in this country, now as the state of America. Particularly on the heels of the pandemic, I've been on a broken record in talking about the role that tribal health has played in COVID-19 response. But it feels even more timely and I believe a bit overdue in terms of a moment to recognize Alaska tribes for the first time through Alaska statute. But I also believe that this opportunity is one that can heal historic political divisions and really put Alaska on the best, put our best foot forward, if you will, in terms of moving the state forward in our relationship with tribes. And so with that, I will move over to my staff, Lily Bathroom.
Hello,
thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to present this informal office at the precinct before handing things off to Ms. Anderson and his team. And put simply, HB 1023 was an affirmation of a relationship that has already been recognized and affirmed by all three branches of the federal government, as well as both the judicial and executive branches of the United States government. It is a relatively short bill consisting of only six sections. The first section consists of legislative funding and detail language. That is a bit unusual for bills, but the Tribal Issues Committee last year wanted to provide a legislative intent section. Yes, they thought it was particularly important to provide some context for what they considered to be landmark legislation in the history of Alaska's relationship with its tribes. Sections 2, 3, and 4 are mostly kind of the changes. Section 5 is really the operative part of the bill, and consists of four sentences, three of which carry most of the weight. The first sentence recognizes the tribe's unique status, and it's really a federal question. Notably, it uses the word special and unique, words that appear in a Richard Nixon's 1970 special address on Indian affairs. The second sentence is really the core of the bill, and it recognizes the list of federally recognized tribes. It also defers to and acknowledges the federal government's recognition of tribal status. So the statute that it references is the Recognized Tribal List Act. The third sentence states explicitly that this bill does not interfere with the federal government's trust relationship with tribes or create a state trust of its own. And we thought that it was important to put into this bill a statement that the legislature is obligated to include it to replace or diminish the federal relationship with tribes. Now that we've gone over kind of some of the stuff that the bill does do, I think it's worth very briefly touching on a few things that it does not do. It does not create any additional rights and privileges that tribes do not already have. It does not, and listening to some of the questions that this bill worked through the committee process last year, one of the questions that came up is, will this enable tribes to meet concerns? And the answer to that is no. And also, in your committee packets, you'll see that there is a memo from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We got some legal review from them about whether or not this was any cause for concern with regard to access to natural resources. And they were kind of dissatisfied about saying that it was not. And with that, if any of us don't have questions, I'd like to hand off to Dr. Paul Thompson and Tony from the city of San Jose.
As long as you can hear us, go ahead and put yourselves on the record and begin your testimony. I hope this will echo
We testify today in support of House Bill 123. We seek recognition as a means to wellness. We don't seek title recognition for authority alone. We need the authority bill as a way to fix the problems that plague our tribal communities, and we hope to explain that in our presentation. Next slide, please. So tribal governments existed for thousands of years before the state of Alaska and before the United States government. Tribal governments were embedded in a very strict religious government based on the covenants between the people, the land, the water, the animals. The tribal leaders then implemented tribal laws and reflected tribal laws based on these covenants. And the economy was completely different than you can imagine today. And it was based on our hunting and fishing lifestyle. And we have remnants of those traditional tribal governments that existed before contact today, but our tribal governments are quite different. They have withstood colonialism, and they are still, they've been oppressed for so many decades that they, in many ways, need to be developed again. We need a reemergence of our nationhood, and we believe that this reemergence will be the key to really fixing some of our issues we find in our Native communities. But tribes, Native peoples and tribes have existed in America since time immemorial, and this is recognized in the Alaska Supreme Court in the John V. Baker case, right out of Representative Crump's country. Next slide, please. So, westernized, you have an understanding of the definition of tribes. You can say that it doesn't have to be easy on in Alaska, so our Alaskans understand tribes. So the first period, of course, is the colonial period, and this goes to the fact that tribes predated, the United States government predated the Constitution in 1788, and that's why you have tribes actually embedded in the United States Constitution. The next period is the removal and relocation period. You've probably heard of the Trail of Tears. This is when President Andrew Jackson removed the five civilized tribes to Oklahoma. Many East Coast tribes were removed during this time. Next was the reservation and treaty-making period, where the United States government entered into treaties with tribes. Next was the allotment and assimilation era. This resulted in the creation of allotments in Alaska. Alaska was a little behind in some of these policy periods, so it was Alaska allotment act was in 1936. The next era was Indian self-government era. And the reason why we had a change in policies is because none of them worked. And so Congress and the presidents at the time was like, what are we going to do to try and actually address them? So they kept changing their policies. When removal and relocation didn't work, they moved into the treaty making. When the treaty making kind of, the tribes maybe got too much power, too much authority in their treaties. So then they moved into the allotment where they kind of divide up Indian land, native lands. And then there was this Indian self-government period where there was kind of this notion that, well, maybe we should deal with tribes and nations. The problem of the Indian self-government period was that it was very paternalistic. It was Washington, D.C. telling tribes how they should do things. What was that notion of, oh, I know what's best for you? That really didn't work because D.C. didn't know what was best for a tribe out in New Mexico. So then we went into the termination era, like, okay, we don't know what to do with Native people. Let's just try to get them assimilated, get them terminate the tribes. And that's what happened with our Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. It was part of this termination era. Get away from Native lands, in that federal relationship. This also proved not to work. And then that's when President Nixon introduced the Indian Self-Determination Policy. And he was able to achieve this policy by really just the conservative value of the local people know how best to govern themselves. And this is what has carried us through to the present, is the self-determination notion and policy that tribal leaders, tribal governments know what's best for their people, and they should be implementing their own governance and their thought that legal status was restored, and it was because the determination error that was taken away. And then also, there was a number of federal policies passing statutes during this era, which really terminated the federal supervision of tribes. And maybe it was subjecting tribes to the state jurisdiction only. So, yes, thank you for that question.
Representative Martinez has a question.
I know, along the same lines, I can give you the term, but the determination, the current determination, was it by a final attempt to do part of the federal government to do complete dissolution? Was it by the state saying, we're going to recognize you formally legally as a tribe, and we want you to be totally assimilated into the United States as any other person? Is that effectable?
No, I think you're really on base. And in Alaska, you see that it just didn't work. I don't know if you went to Alaska high schools, but we just weren't. At least when I was going to high school in the late 90s, we just weren't even taught about tribes. We're not taught about Alaska history, and that's because it was a remnant of this termination era, which is not taught about tribes. Let's just not teach anyone about tribes. Let's not teach any people about their own governments. And that was purposeful. It was, okay, let's just not deal with them. But unfortunately, that's not the way federal Indian law works. Congress has to explicitly terminate a tribe, explicitly take away rights of self-governance. And so that's why in Alaska, our tribes were never terminated. Because Congress didn't do that explicitly, and our tribes continued at the local level exhibiting acts of governance. And once we built up the case law, which we'll get into in this presentation, we're here today asking for the Alaska legislature to recognize our legal status.
Can you give me any, is there any geographic element to the definition, or is it how, if there was a standard census or a larger census that defined tribes, does that exist in the county opinions? Sorry about that. I just need to get a little bit more idea of what we mean when we say tribes.
When they were terminated and they were seeking to get recognized again,
Some of the
Okay. immigration policy. It's the only policy that has worked to significant progress in reversing otherwise distressed social, cultural, and economic conditions in Native communities. The policy of self-determination reflects a political equilibrium, which has held for four decades, and which has withstood various shifts in the party control of Congress and the White House. The first piece of legislation, Public Law 93638, is called the Indian Self-Determination Act of 1975. Tribes have identified the federal government services that they have wished to provide to their own tribal members, and they contract that for federal funding to provide those services themselves. So this is where you've seen tribes in Alaska have the ability to roll out their vaccines and so effectively and efficiently. It's because we have used this Indian Self-Determination Act contracted under one contract that's called the Compact with the Indian Health Service, all of the tribes in Alaska, the 231 tribes, and we've taken over the responsibility to deliver health care to Alaska Natives, and we do it ourselves. And we've developed a system over the past few decades with very short-funded budgets, so we know how to really be effective and efficient, I should say, in the delivery of health care. So it's important. Educating our Alaskan citizens on tribes is important, not only for that local governance aspect, but also because tribes bring so much to the state of Alaska. We're bringing a federal relationship, and that federal relationship comes with great resources to Alaskans and benefits all Alaskans. And at TCC, we're able to see non-tribal members in our village clinics because of our federal relationship. And we also see our veterans. We're able to treat our veterans because of our relationship with Veterans Affairs that we've established between our tribes and veterans. So I just think it's so important. This self-determination policy and the statute itself brings so much to Alaska because of our 231 tribes. In 2000, there was an executive order that was implemented that has established regular and meaningful consultation and collaboration with tribes on federal policies. It recognizes the United States' unique legal relationship. It confirms the U.S. recognizes tribes as domestic dependent nations under its protection. The executive order recognizes a trust relationship with Indian tribes, that's on the next slide, recognizes the right of Indian tribes to self-governance, tribal authority, and self-determination, and all federal agencies are required to respect Indian self-government and authority. So this is where you see tribes in Alaska, let's say if they're is a policy for, let's use the Center for Medicare. If they're coming out with a new regulation, they are required to consult tribes. Even before the regulation is written, they're required to say, hey, we have this idea of changing a regulation or changing a policy. How will this impact you tribes, and please help us contribute to writing this policy if it will work. So that has really improved, the consultation policy has really improved the development of good policy and good regulations because tribes are at the forefront of writing those things. And as we all know, those Medicaid regulations get so complicated, so relationship between the state of Alaska and tribes. By the time of statehood, we had, you know, the Alaska Constitution doesn't recognize tribes. There was already this thought that the treaty making and the 1048 would have been good for state sovereignty. And there was this thought that denying the existence of tribes would result in the best result impact for Alaskans. I think the impact, though, to our people in the villages and in Alaska Native people is the state has been telling tribes, you don't exist. You don't have the authority to fix the problems for yourselves in the villages. You don't have that voice in government. And that has been very detrimental. And I think it has significantly contributed to some of the social ills that face our people today. And that's why we're seeking recognition. We want that authority, not for the power, but really for the ability to roll up our sleeves and really create solutions. Next slide. As I mentioned previously, not only in advocacy, but also in my policy, the state has had refused to recognize tribes. In 1988, there was a case for Native Village Stevens versus Alaska Management Planning, where the Alaska Stevens went out that tribes in Alaska generally did not exist until for that reason the Stevens Village did not have sovereignty issues. There was also a draft decision order in 1991 when the state of Alaska opposed expansion of tribal governmental powers in the nation of Indian Country in Alaska. So the federal government representatives have a question. So we have a question. Let's see who it is. Stevens Village was a serving sovereign immunity, which is a principle entitled to all tribes and places like it. It's a similar concept as two states having sovereign immunity as well in the United States, so they were not able to refer to their sovereign immunity.
You know, the practical implications of that, in other words, this case came up in the court, they're trying to make this, but that specific.
Court has no jurisdiction. and we went to court and we claimed sovereign immunity, the court would be like, go take care of this issue in tribal court. Exhaust your remedies. But today, when we enter into commercial agreements, such as a contract to build a house in the village, what we do is have a limited waiver of sovereign immunity so that we are able to enter into contracts because these contractors wouldn't enter into a contract with us if they knew they couldn't have their day in court in state court. So what tribes do is they waive their sovereign immunity, very limited, just specifically to that contract, and then the state court will hear any claims brought forward. So the federal government responded to the state of village of Stevens holding that tribes arrested truly did not exist. Stating that there are no unresolved legal questions regarding years back, when we talked about previous positions in Alaska tribes, we were in this committee from other testifiers. The simple fact that despite the number of federally recognized tribes in Alaska, that the state of Alaska has sued its tribes more than any other state in the nation. I was hoping to get a sense of what contributes to this hostile position of the state suing tribes in Alaska.
Sure. In tribal custody case, for example, if
so tribes don't have any land in Alaska. Ward lands, most of them, some tribes own a small fee land, maybe a lot for their tribal home or larger lots, but mostly we're landless except for Mount Makatla. So then, because of ANCSA, and there was no mention of tribes in Alaska for a long time in policy, it was like, okay, they don't have land, then do they not exist? And what John P. Baker said is jurisdiction can be based on land, but that's just one form. In Alaska, the tribes have jurisdiction over their government. They can form their own government, make the government what they want, and that includes determining who their tribal members are, and that also includes having jurisdiction over their tribal members, the members themselves. So I'm a member of Stevens Village, I'm with Karen Phoenix. They have jurisdiction to protect me and my tribal member children, even though I'm here in Fairbanks, has nothing to do with geography. So that's another cornerstone of John P. Baker. It kind of sorted that out because just the law wasn't clear at the time of how do you have a tribe without land? Well, we do it in Alaska, and we have jurisdiction based on our membership. And it's the same in the state of, it's same in like child protection matters with states. The state has the jurisdiction over the child, even if the child leaves the state. The state still has that jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Very helpful. Please continue.
I think the case that you know in an answer is because I guess that will help perfect insight. I see the end result. It was very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Slide 17, the next slide, we're going to briefly touch on the first two bullet points, and then Ms. Dane will touch on the third point. So, now we've examples of birth history, very brief, just such an example. What will Hospital 123 do that's positive? And what's the benefit of that for us? So, first, we will bring the Alaska State Legislature in line with the other branches of state government regarding the status of Alaska tribes. We just discussed that the Supreme Court has taken out the legislative proceedings as to John P. Baker recognizing tribes. We saw the mention of the executive order. That the very subjective first statement opening up this morning said that the legislature creates policy. So now is the opportunity for the state legislature to create policy that state of Alaska recognizes in what's required. And we have questions more about legislative instances of suing tribes today. I think it's important to say that this is not going to confer anything new to tribes. It's not going to grant any new authority. But the status of tribes, they have the authority. What this will do is the state will formally, hopefully, stop letting tribes and fighting tribes on their authority and move them back to working together. The second point. Modernizing policy for investigative tribes by officially moving the state legislature out of the Determination Act into the Self-Determination Act. We talked about that at the that tribes are still taking away from power from the state, taking resources, taking funding, that the tribes don't really have something that belongs to the state. This is a tool from the top market to move the state of Alaska formally out of that mentality to the self-determination. And in a lot of ways, the state has already done that. We see many examples of that. This is a formal statement of what many agencies in the state and many state employees are already doing. They're just formally recognizing that and bringing away whatever struggle is happening. Thank you. And we have the potential in Alaska. We have the most tribes. We have the most college educated Native people in the country. We have the actual most traditional Native people in the country. We have Native languages still that are robust. We in Alaska can create an awesome tribal state relationship. We have the potential to bring this basic legislation and create a new kind of relationship. We can lead the country in what the tribal state relationships should be. We have this negative past, but we have the whole future in front of us, and I'm just so excited because I think our vaccine rollout, because of our federal relationship, kind of showed our Alaskan citizens, like, we can do great things, our tribes can do great things, we want to partner, we want to serve the state in new ways, and this is just like a first step in just tackling some of the issues that we face together with the state fiscal crisis. Education of our Native peoples and all of Alaskans, we can have this awesome relationship. Figure out public safety, you know, get weaponized by the authority of our tribes to tackle these hard issues, and we're going to see great results. So I'm just really excited. I'm really honored that Representative Fields shared his personal history because I also have that personal material on my paternal side. So we all kind of have this really awesome relationship with tribes, and as Alaskans, we just do because we're all, you know, we're all embedded in the culture in some way. And we just relate to each other in this very unique way, and tribes are to be celebrated, and I just really thank you for your time, your questions, and your concern about this issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you both, Ms. Singer and Ms. Anderson, for your continued efforts on this and so many issues of our tribes and our respective areas of the state, as well as your incredible brief but important introduction into the case law surrounding this issue. Any other questions or comments for our presenters this evening? All right, seeing none, thank you again for joining us today, and that will include our invited testimony for today. Our next meeting will be Thursday, April 1st, at 8 a.m. here in Davis-Trumbull 106. We will be moving a second hearing in House Bill 123 with both invited and public testimony. If committee members would like to submit proposed amendments to House Bill 123, please submit them to our office by 3 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, March 31st. The time is